Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson, and, well, actually just me, Rick Pearson. Ben and Jane are on holiday this week, but we do have an amazing interviewee, so it's not just going to be me droning on about my own running. Kevin Webber's coming on. He was our first ever interviewee on the Runner's World podcast, our first episode back in February 2018, and his story has got even more remarkable. So without further ado, let's get Kevin on, our guest of the week.
Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Our next guest was our first ever guest on the Runner's World podcast in early 2018. Back then, he told us about his terminal diagnosis and how running was helping him to lengthen and enhance his life. Most doctors wouldn't have given him much chance of still being here 4 years on. But Kevin Webber has grown used to defying the odds, and I'm delighted to have him here today to discuss his new book, Dead Man Running, One Man's Story of Running to Stay Alive. So Kevin, welcome back to the Runner's World podcast.
I can't tell you how pleased I am still to be here.
Well, for listeners unfamiliar with your backstory, can you briefly give us the context for this book?
Yeah, sure. So in 2014, I was 49 years old. And after some minor symptoms of getting up in the night for a wee, I went to the doctors and I found out I had terminal prostate cancer. And the doctor said to me that I might only live 2 years, if I was lucky, 3 to 4. So, that kind of, after a month of being sad and depressed about life, about me and my family, that kind of spurred me on to make the most of every day, really. And here I am 7 years on. 56 years old, and so the last 5 years, never thought I'd be here.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Can we talk a little bit about the role that that running has played in your continual fight against this? When did that come in? When do you think actually, you know what, running's something that I want to keep doing, or maybe start doing?
Yeah, I mean, I always ran a little bit, you know, just to stay fit. I probably did a couple of marathons a year because I worked stupid hours and didn't really have the time to train as much as I wanted to. And then when I got ill, I remember it was the day after chemotherapy. And, you know, I felt, as I'm sure everyone can imagine, you feel after the first chemotherapy session. And it was January and it was grey and miserable outside. And I just thought, I'm going to go for a run. And whilst a week before I managed to run 20 miles, no problem at all, all I managed was 3, but I got home feeling absolutely shattered and sick, but so happy that I could still run. You know, the definition of running is both feet in the air at the same time, and that's kind of what I managed to do. And it just made me feel that, you know, prostate cancer or any cancer takes away so much from your life, but suddenly there was something I could still do, and it was running. So it started from there, and then it just kept on growing.
Can we talk about the role that it's played, that running's played physically in your life, and then I'd like to ask what the kind of impact it's had mentally as well. So maybe we could start with the physical impact that continuing to run has had.
Yeah, sure. I mean, when I was first diagnosed, I told my doctor that I'd entered the Brighton Marathon before I was ill and I wanted to run it, and he really tried to talk me out of it, said it wasn't a good idea, didn't know anyone else with my kind of cancer and my kind of chemo that had run a marathon. But I said, I really want to do it. I already realised it gave me a purpose, because when you get told you haven't got long to live, the statement, what's the point, keeps on coming into your mind. Now, what's the point of staying fit? What's the point of looking at new anything? But suddenly, because I could still run, there was a reason to stay fit. There was a reason to learn about stretching. There was a reason to eat healthily. There was a reason to buy running magazines and read about new kit and buy shiny new shoes, because that was something that could happen in the short term, even though I didn't think I had a medium term. So physically, my doctor said, no, don't do it. But I decided I wanted to do it. He kind of reluctantly accepted I was going to. So, you know, on week 13 of chemo, I ran the Brighton Marathon. And what's interesting is, roll on 7 years, and speaking to my doctor now, and he said, if you saw me today in the same situation you were in 7 years ago, I would say, yeah, keep on running. Yeah, run that marathon. Because what they've learned in those 7 years is actually exercise helps you tolerate chemotherapy better and actually gives better results. So, you know, bizarrely, what I was doing unwittingly, unknowing to me and my doctor, was physically actually good for me. And, you know, I've read so much about what makes people tick. One thing definitely makes you tick is having your heart pump your blood faster. So you do that, of course, by raising your heart rate, and you do that by things like running, you know. So to me, running, it's all about that, because running makes my blood go faster. That actually, the natural filters in my body, therefore, may help take out some of the rubbish that's in there. And that's kind of a theory I've worked on for the last 7 years, and it's still going. You know, I when I was diagnosed, I probably got to know about 20 men who were diagnosed a year before or a year after me in the same situation as me. So they had effectively terminal prostate cancer. Of those 20 men, there's only two of us alive now. So 18 of them are sadly no longer with us. And you know what? The other guy runs as well. Now, I can't say running will stop you getting prostate cancer or will keep you alive, but in my stupid straw poll of 20, the two people still here are the people that run a lot. And when I say a lot, I mean kind of 5 days a week or more. Yeah. So, you know, I genuinely believe we all should exercise for 20 minutes a day and get that heart pumping fast. And running is, in my opinion, the best way of doing it.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. I mean, so that's the kind of physical side, I guess. As far as what running was doing for your mental state, what impact was it having on that?
Well, I think, as I said a minute ago, you know, you think, what's the point? It really was, you know, and I sadly witness people who, when they get told they only have 2 years to live, they kind of hit the bottle because they just think, you know, I just drown my sorrows. They don't exercise. They eat, I don't mean the wrong things, as in they're not good to eat, but they, you know, they like steak and chips and pie and chips every night. That's what they have. They don't. They forget to worry about their health. So mentally, for me, by actually having that purpose to run, it made me feel good. I remember when I got back off that first run, and my wife could see that I was in pain, but she just saw this big grin on my face, and mentally, that's what it was about. I remember when I was training for the Brighton Marathon, and I was about 8 miles into a 15-mile training run, and it was raining. I just stopped and burst into tears. Absolutely, you know, cried my eyes out. If someone drove past at the time, I must have wondered what was going on. And at that moment, I then visualised what it would be like to cross the finish line of the Brighton Marathon. I'd run that race before when I was healthy. It's my only sub-4-hour marathon. And I just knew what it was like. And I thought, I could see me in my Prostate Cancer UK shirt, my arms in the air, and how good would it feel to do that for me, for the charity, and for other people who have prostate cancer or any other problem in their life, just so they could realise how good it is to do something and have a goal and aim for it. And that's what it was like. And so from then on, many times in my life, I felt a bit of sadness coming, a bit of reality of what my future will hold at some stage. And almost instantly, I've managed to kick out the bad thoughts by bringing in a running thought, be it a race I've already run or a race I'm about to run, or running with friends, or running in a location. It's such a great feeling. And, you know, you haven't got to be ill to understand that when you run, after that first sort of 10 minutes, you have that clarity of thought. You know, your heart and your body kind of says, okay, I know what I'm doing now. We're going for a run. So everything calms down. You think about what you're doing. Everything goes, and you go, okay, well, what do I want to think about? Do I want to think about my family, about another race? Just have a blank mind, listen to music. Running is the only way I can ever do that. I don't get distracted by anything when I run. It's fantastic. And if you go to a wow location to run as well, and that hasn't got to be overseas, so something like, you know, for me, it might be run over Beachy Head, for example. That's a fantastic place to run. And you bust your lungs on the ups, and then you feel like you're flying on the downs. And if you look to one side, there's the sea and, you know, the lighthouse. And if you look to the other side, there's grass. And it's just a fantastic place to run. And so mentally, it just gets rid of all those bad thoughts. And of course, I come home from a run and I'm absolutely buzzing. And, you know, and my wife says to me, and my kids say, you know, whilst they miss me when I go running, because obviously sometimes I'm away for a week at a time, the happy Kev that is the one before the race, and the ecstatic Kev, the one that comes back from the race, is someone that they want to be around, because I'm like a Duracell bunny and I'm bouncing off the walls with happiness. Opposed to if I didn't run, I think the danger is you just find yourself on that spiral of depression and what the future's going to bring, and that would make me a very difficult person to be around, I think.
Yeah. You mentioned there wow locations, which I think is really something that's going to chime with a lot of runners. Of all the places you've been, all the challenges you've done, is there one that kind of sticks in your mind more than the rest, as far as maybe a challenge you're proud of completing, or one that you loved more than any other?
That's such a hard question, because
it's
like choosing one, which one is your favourite seven children sort of thing. Because they're all brilliant in their own way. You know, I like simple runs, so I live in Epsom. So running over Epsom Downs to Box Hill is a fantastic run. It's very easy. There's not a lot of effort involved in getting there. Yeah. And it's familiar, and I know where I am. And I love that place, and I love the view from the top of Box Hill. And I know when I'm running up it how much it's going to hurt my lungs, but the satisfaction at the top. But then I say to myself, well, actually, when I was running in the Arctic and the Northern Lights were out and I was pulling my sledge, and it was like 3 a.m. and it was like minus 40. That was just wow. To look up at the sky, and all you could do was look up for 10 seconds. It was so cold that literally your eyelashes froze. So you looked up the sky for 10 seconds, saw the amazing Northern Lights of green and purple and red swirling around. And then you had to look down at the floor again for about a minute just so that the wind stopped whipping in your face. So that's a great view. And then you run the Marathon de Sables and you're in the Sahara, and the sky is this perfect blue and the sand is this golden yellow, and the contrast of the two is just something I never see anywhere else. And then I was in I'm in the jungles of Cambodia and that's amazing, with the triple canopy of trees and the dusty track, and everything's hot and sweaty, and just I can't pick, but they're all great. And I'm privileged that I've had the chance to run in so many places. And I'm privileged I can still run, because I know some people can't, and one day I won't be able to either.
Yeah, it's I've heard you talk about being, feeling privileged, and maybe in a sort of strange way, this diagnosis being an invitation to live more in some ways, and to feel more grateful about life. I think I'm right in saying that you've said that you've called it a gift, the diagnosis is a gift, which seems in some ways to be very counterintuitive to what you might think a diagnosis like that should be. Could you explain a bit more what you mean by that?
Sure. I mean, of course, if I could turn back the clock 7 years and the doctor said to me, you're okay, you haven't got prostate cancer, I would snatch that straight away, because of course no one actually wants cancer. However, just like every challenge we have in our lives, you can choose. When you get some bad news, you can choose. You can be sad and miserable and dwell on it forever and waste every day. Or you can say, do you know what, it's whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I won't look back in time to come and say, I'm really pleased I spent 4 days crying about something. Because what you might say is, I wish I spent those 4 days doing something else. And for me, it's just about running. I love running. And, at the moment, I just didn't complete the Marathon de Sables for the fifth time. It was probably the toughest Marathon de Sables ever a couple of weeks ago. And it just gave me a chance to reset. I was upset when I didn't finish. It was only day one. I was ill before the start. I got 15K in and I was physically ill, end up in a hospital tent for 2 days. But almost instantly, I had like 5 minutes of wallowing in self-pity. And then it was about, well, actually, I'm still here. I can still talk to people. I'm still part of the race, even if I'm not on the race. I can enjoy other people's successes. Yeah. And then, there was a charity thing out there for a school, the Marathon des Sables supports, and I went there and see all these kids that basically only go to school because people who run the Marathon des Sables give things to them. And I'd managed to get my local road to give me loads of football shirts, and I'd taken those out there, and somebody would give me money because they didn't have kids with their old football shirts. And to give those football shirts to the kid and to give money to that charity was just amazing. And so I can't be upset because I didn't finish the race. It's just one of those things. So yeah, running's brilliant, but it hasn't got to be the be-all and end-all about finishing. You know, I've DNF'd probably four times, I think, now in races. Yeah. And you know, at the time, yeah, of course I was sad. You know, I remember one of them, I didn't let it go for probably a month. And what a waste of a month that was. What a waste it was thinking, rather than just thinking that was them, what did I do wrong? It's all that blame culture. It's always someone else's fault. Actually, it was my fault. I wasn't fit enough. I got my tactics wrong. And therefore, all I've got to do is reboot, think about it, don't get it wrong next time. What have you learned? And I like to think every DNF I've ever done, I then come back stronger next time.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Do you feel like that's an attitude you've always had, or do you think in some ways that going through this experience has actually changed your attitude to racing and maybe made you more grateful to run in the first place?
Absolutely. I often say, but when I was first diagnosed, I was walking across Trafalgar Square, and in chalk on the pavement was written, "You only have two lives, and the second one starts when you realise you only have one." And I think, like most people, before I was ill, I went around thinking, oh, if I don't do it today, I'll do it tomorrow or next week or next month or next year. And then suddenly you realise, actually, you might not have tomorrow, next month, next year. And that's not about cancer. That's about we could all get hit by a bus tomorrow. You know, no one actually knows what's going to happen tomorrow. So, you know, every day is a gift. My wife says to me every morning, if you wake up and you feel okay, then it's going to be a good day. And she's spot on. You know, feeling okay is good enough. I haven't got to feel like $1 million every day. As long as I feel okay, then I can get out and run. And some days I wake up and I feel nauseous, be it the drugs or something that I'm on. And I go for a run, and within 5 minutes, the nausea's gone and I'm feeling good again. And that, you know, that runner's high, whether it be the endorphins or just getting my heart pumping that blood through me fast, like I talked about earlier. Don't know what the reason is. I don't really care what the reason is. I know that running one way or another helps me have a better life. And you know, if you run every day, like I try to, so I run today, and then when I finish running, I plan where I'm going to run tomorrow. So I get kind of two hits from running a day. And then tomorrow, of course, I run tomorrow when I thought I was going to run today. And then I plan the next day's run. And that's just fantastic. You know, I sit there with my OS app and I plan how far, and then also I plan when. And that's, I think, really important. I don't think, shall I run tomorrow? It's where shall I run and what time and how far? And I think if you can get in your head that bit about shall I run should never be the question. It should be where and when and how far only. Those are the three things you think about. It's fantastic. And I've fallen back in love with parkrun again. There was a period of time where I thought, oh, parkrun's too short. You know, I want to run 10 miles and 20 miles. But actually running parkrun every other week is just a fantastic way to meet other people. And it's probably the only time I actually get competitive when I run, because when I run ultramarathons, I'm never going to do very well in a race. And it's competing against myself. But in parkrun, suddenly I want to overtake that person in front of me. And you know, and the last parkrun every month is a thing called 5K Your Way, which is about anyone with any kind of cancer is encouraged to come and run parkrun. And I've met so many people that actually can't run. They've just come through chemotherapy. They may have had a mastectomy and had all sorts of things done to them. And they come along and they walk. And they walk the 5K. And then they say, well, next month I'm going to try and train so maybe I can run a minute or 2 minutes. And that's why I'm so grateful to parkrun for existing, because it just gives people hope. It gives them a goal and something to aim for, and some friendship that you wouldn't otherwise get.
Hmm. How, like, compared to the Kevin Webber of early 2018 that we talked to you first time around, how would you describe your health today? Do you think you're in a better place physically than then, or is it roughly the same, or do you feel like it's harder?
I think one of the problems with people when they're ill is it's too easy to blame the illness. Now, I'm sure, you know, 5 years on, the drugs are definitely taking a toll. They definitely have some side effects that aren't conducive to running the best race you'll ever race. But I'm also 5 years older. So, you know, I'm 56 now, I'm not 49. So I'm bound to be a bit slow. There's a reason why, like, parkrun, for example, was age graded, because it does get harder as you get older. It's just about being the best you can be on any given day. And, you know, if you don't feel so well, but you still want to go for a run, then still go for a run. But just accept you're going to be a bit slower. You know, I see too many people who constantly worry about times. And I know, I always take my watch with me. So I know there are some people that say, just run without a watch, it's liberating. Actually, for me, I like my watch just because it tells me how far I've run. I don't care how long it took. I just like to know how far I've run. You know, every year I try and run as big a distance as possible. I think this year, if I'm lucky, I'll get to 5,000 kilometres. It doesn't matter to me if my average pace was 7 minute kilometres or 9 minute kilometres. I just want to know that I've run. It's kind of like affirmation that I have actually been for a run. Whereas some people, you know, I've known people on Strava that actually, if they don't like their time, they'll delete it because it will bring their average down. And I think, I just don't understand that. It's like cheating reality. But a number of people that do that because they want to almost use Strava as a bragging tool. And to me, I don't understand that. Strava's great for training. If that's what you want to do, it's great for seeing what you've done. But to start deleting it because you're not pleased with what you've done, I just think that's a question why you run.
Yeah, agreed. Look, I want to talk about your book, Dead Man Running. So can you give us a sense of what the book's all about and what you're trying to communicate through the book as well?
Yeah, I mean, I've been talking about my story pretty much ever since I was diagnosed, just because I realised that life hasn't got to come to a full stop just because you get told some bad news. And I wanted to prove to people that you can choose to be the best person you are every day, and you haven't got to let something bad in your life take over. And so lots of people said, oh, are you going to write a book? And I kept saying, no, I'm not going to write a book, because I didn't know how to start one. And then a friend of mine, a guy called Mark Church, who's a BBC cricket journalist in lockdown, he had no work, so he said, look, come on, let's do it. So we did it online. We spent 4 hours a week, me talking, him listening, him writing it up, then me amending it and editing it. And at the end of 5 months, we had a book. And having now read the book as a book rather than as a sort of a weekly edit, I start to realise what I hope it's doing for people. I hope people read it and think, actually, doesn't matter what happens, you can choose to be the best version of you every day. So, and I talk about things like when I go to the hospital, so I have to go to the Royal Marsden Hospital for my cancer treatment, And I go there, you know, probably 15 times a year. And you might say, well, that must be an awful place to go to. And of course, there's some sad stuff that goes on there. But to me, it's my happy place, because I see going to the Royal Marsden Hospital as part of my training, because without my cancer treatment, I can't run.
Yeah.
And so mentally, as soon as you start to switch things from the negative side to the positive side, then there's some joy in it. So rather than, you know, when I'm having a blood test, when I'm sitting there with a needle in my arm, I don't think, oh no, that's going to see if I've got worse cancer this month. I say, oh, that's going to make sure that if my cancer's got worse, I have some different drugs to mean I can still run. So it's part of my training. It's a bit like, if you like eating, don't be scared of the dentist. Rejoice that you go to the dentist, because they're going to make sure you can carry on eating.
Yeah,
see right. It as a bad thing. And so if you put that into every context, you can find joy everywhere. So, you know, I always get disappointed in people that watch telly and they say, oh, it's moving wallpaper. I'm not really watching it. I'm just watching it because I might as well do something. By all means, watch telly with people and have a conversation. That's great. Or watch telly to enjoy it. But if ever you get to a stage where you're watching telly and you're not having a conversation and you're not enjoying it, then just turn it off and do something else. Go for a run, if you ask me. But hey, you know, just do those things. And if you can't run, because, you know, we all get injured, I occasionally get a few niggles, then do the next best thing to me, which is either do some exercises that will get you stronger, or go and marshal. So there's, you know, for me, one of the things I love doing, and I don't do it enough, is helping other races, because they only run because of volunteers. So, you know, if there's a weekend we don't feel like running, because you've got a bit of a cold, or you've got a tweak in your knee or something, then just phone up a race that's nearby and say, do you need someone to help? And they'll bite your arm off. And actually supporting 50 runners coming past you is probably actually more fun and more worthwhile than you running and being one of those 50 runners. So, yeah, absolutely sign up to help races exist, because without volunteers, they won't exist. And we all enjoy a race now and again, so we all should do our part.
No, it's, I think that's really true, Kevin. And the book sounds amazing. If people want to get hold of it, is it out now, or where can they go?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you can get it on Amazon. I mean, I'm sure you can get it elsewhere, but Amazon seems to be the place of people's choice. Yeah. So the easiest thing is just type in Dead Man Running and Kevin Webber, and you'll find it there. And yeah, thank you very much. Hopefully you'll find an inspiring read. And, you know, if nothing else, I'd like to think that it will encourage a runner, because I imagine it's runners that we're hearing this, to think next time they're thinking, oh, it's raining, I won't go outside, to think, actually, it's raining, I'll put my waterproof on and go for a run. Because just like me, you never know which run might be your last. And I don't want to look back and say, oh, last week I could have gone for that run with a friend and I said no, for a silly reason, like it was cold or something, and now I've pulled a muscle and I can't run. I wish I'd run with that person. So, you know, one of my things is, you know, enjoy every day, never waste a minute, but never ever create a new regret. Because if you create a new regret, you can't change that. It's gone. You know, we only have today once, so you just have to make the most of it every single day.
Kevin, it's so good to talk to you, and an absolute pleasure to have you back on the Runner's World podcast. And look, let's do it again in 4 years' time.
That would be amazing. I'd very much like to be here.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Kevin Webber, and to you, of course, for listening. You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World for just £5. Head over to hearstmagazines.co.uk/Runner's World podcast to get this exclusive listener offer. You can listen to the Runner's World UK podcast on Acast, iTunes and all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK. Please subscribe. It makes us very happy. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.